and the Lord Mistborn, Lady Truth, Wax's own ancestor, Edgard Ladrian. Portly and self-satisfied, in his portrait he held a cup of wine. He'd always looked like the sort of person Wax would want to punch on sight, the type who was certainly guilty of something. Wax ignored the displays of various relics from the world of Ash, and didn't enter the chamber that held the resting places of the Ascendant Warrior and her husband, though he did raise his gun and spin the cylinder toward them in acknowledgement. A rough's tradition to respect the fallen.
"What's this?"
A bleary-eyed woman stepped out of a nearby room, apparently a small apartment for the caretaker.
"Nobody was to be let in."
"Routine inspection," Wax said, striding past without looking.
"Routine? In the middle of the night?"
"You asked for constable involvement," Wax said. "Codes require that when you ask for guards from the precinct, we have to do an inspection to make sure you don't have contraband."
"Contraband?" the woman asked. "This is the Originator Tomb."
"Just doing my job," Wax said. "You can take it up with my superiors outside if you wish." She stormed out toward the front doors in a huff as Wax reached a small room, unadorned with relics or plaques. The only thing in here was a hole in the ground. It was a gaping pit, fenced by a railing to keep inquisitive children from tumbling in. There was a ladder, but Wax dropped a bullet casing and jumped, falling freely a short distance before slowing himself and hitting the dark, glossy stone floor at the bottom. A few lights dangled from the ceiling, like drips of molasses. He pushed on a nearby light switch, causing the lights to flicker on throughout the enormous cavern. He'd visited here as a youth. Every tutor brought their charges to visit, and he understood it was common in the public schools as well. It felt different now, standing alone in a large, low-ceilinged chamber. No jabbering tourists to break the mood or chase away visions of the past. He could hear much better the water rushing in the distance where the river flowed. Parts of the caverns were supposed to have flooded over time. He could only vaguely remember explanations during his tour here of why others remained dry. He walked into the cavern, trying to imagine what it had been like to huddle in one of these caves, the world dying outside, wondering if you were going to spend the rest of your short life trapped in darkness. He trailed his fingers on the stone walls as he wound around corners. The place was large and open, but also contained a series of smaller, bulbous chambers at the side. Most were part of the museum and contained plaques with quotes from the originators, written in metal. Others contained depictions of the rebuilding of the world, or other relics such as a replica of both Harmony's bands and the Bands of Mourning. One entire chamber was dedicated to the Words of Founding, Harmony's books, lore, knowledge, and own holy account of what had happened to the world of Ash. Another chamber contained volumes by other originators, some of which were considered holy canon by one sect or another, while some, like the Doxythium, were decidedly apocryphal. Wax had tried to read the thing once. Copyright pages were more interesting. He lingered at a chamber dedicated to the survivor, containing 100 different depictions of him by various artists, some contemporary, others ancient. There was fervent fascination with his posthumous apparitions to people during the final days, though Harmony himself attributed those to the faceless immortals. Echoing voices chased Wax onward. Wayne would probably give him hell for confusing the poor people, rather than just telling them what he was doing. Of course, Wayne would probably have convinced them he was the Lord Ruler, then made them fix him dinner. So he tried not to let Wayne's moral compass influence him too much. Wax counted down the chambers dedicated to each of the medals until he reached the sign of Atium. This little chamber contained documentation and rumors about the mythological medal. Wax didn't have the time to read them. Instead, he followed the blue lines his steel sight showed him. They pointed toward a side wall, where he was able to pry back a decorative piece of wood paneling and push on a lever, popping open a doorway and revealing a cavern beyond. He slipped in, unhooked an old oil lantern from the wall, and pulled the door shut before kneeling down in the pitch blackness, fishing in his gun belt for some matches. As he pulled them out, a growling voice sounded in the dimness. I've been waiting for you. 20. Wax held very still in the darkness. He flared his steel, seeking guidance from that comfortable fire inside of him. The blue lines pointed exclusively behind him. Those pointed toward the hidden doorway and the nails in the wall. There was nothing else. Except, could he just barely make something out? Two faint lines, tiny as the threads of a spider web. He flared his metal, straining, pushing. The lines quivered in the darkness. Then they were gone. Wax whipped out his Sterion and pointed it down the corridor, away from the lines, and fired three times in quick succession. The flash of gunpowder lit the room like lightning as he leveled his other gun toward the blue lines and the source of the sound. In those flashes, he made out something in the darkness crouching nearby. It was inhuman, with bestial eyes and stark white teeth. Rust and ruin. Fingers sweaty on his gun, Wax backed away from the thing, ready to fire. He didn't pull the trigger. You didn't shoot something for talking to you.
"You certainly are a jumpy one," the voice growled.
"Who are you? What are you?"
"Light your lantern, human," the voice said, "and lock that door. Let's be away from here before someone comes to investigate the gunfire."
Wax paused to catch his breath and steady his nerves, but eventually slipped his guns back into their holsters. Whatever it was, it could have attacked him instead of speaking to him. It didn't want him dead. He lit the small lantern, but when he raised it, the creature had retreated into the corridor until it was just a shadow. Still unnerved, Wax flipped the latches he found on the wall, locking the hidden doorway closed from the inside.
"Come," the voice said.
"You're one of them," Wax whispered, raising the lantern and following the shadowy figure, which walked on all fours.
"You're a Chondra." "Yes."
Wax jogged to catch up, his lantern light finally giving him a good look at his companion. A wolfhound, easily the largest he had ever seen, of a mottled gray coloring. The pelt reminded him of the mists.
"I've read about you," Wax said.
"Thrilling," the Chondra growled. "I'm so happy Sazed included me in his little book so that drunk people can curse by my name."
"They do what?"
"Yes."
The wolfhound growled quietly in the back of his throat.
"There are stuffed toys, too."
"Oh, yeah," Wax said. "Sunni cubs. I've seen those around." The growling grew louder, and Wax's nervousness returned. Best not to taunt the immortal hound. He didn't know how many of the legends of this creature were true, but if even a percentage were based in fact.
"So," Wax said, "Guardian, you were waiting for me?"
"It was decided," the Chondra said, "that allowing a human to wander these caverns alone was unwise. I came myself. The others are busy."
"Hunting Bleeder?"
"Counteracting her," the Chondra said, leading him to an intersection, then taking the right fork.
They walked in silence for a short time before Wax cleared his throat.
Do you mind explaining what you mean by that?"
The dog sighed, a discomforting sound. A talking dog was strange, but the sigh was just so human.
"I don't talk much these days," the Chondra said. "I've fallen out of practice, it seems. Baalm is trying to spark a revolution, using skills she learned from the Lord Ruler himself. But she is only one Chondra. She has disdain for the rest of us, and therefore underestimates us in equal measure. We can do what she does, imitating people, appearing on the streets. For every priest she has commit an atrocity, we will have dozens out tonight preaching temperance and peace, pleading with the people not to listen to rumors.
Wise, Wax said. He hadn't considered what the other Chondra might be doing, other than vaguely assuming they were tracking Bleeder. This made good sense. Could he use it somehow in his investigation? As they moved deeper into the caverns, Wax noted a crusty white substance growing on the rocks, a source of powdery residue he'd found on Bleeder's clothing. Presumably, if he extinguished his lantern, he'd be able to see the glow. He might not even need the lantern, but thinking of all this stone surrounding him, separating him from the mists above, he felt no urge to extinguish it. The network of tunnels was far more extensive than he'd expected. He'd thought of this place only as that one cavern underneath the tomb, but that wasn't it at all. Harmony had assembled many different refuges of people as he remade the world, placing them all in the same area that was now Ellendale. How much of the city did these tunnels stretch beneath? He passed a number of them that had flooded. What was the difference between those and the ones that remained dry? As they wound through the tunnels, they passed an opening into a different, large cavern. He raised his lantern to give it a glance, then froze in place. Instead of more rough, natural rock, his light illuminated dusty tiles and pillars, with parts of the floor torn up. Past them, there was what appeared to be a small hut, of all things. "Tensun?" he asked as the Chondra continued forward.
"Come along, human."
"Is that?"
"Yes. Many people hid in the basements of Credit Shaw, the Lord Ruler's palace. Sazed moved that here, as he did with all other caverns of refuge."
Wax couldn't pull himself away, gaping at history, no, mythology, come alive. The Lord Ruler's palace, places where the survivor and his followers had walked. Rusts. The Well of Ascension itself would be in there.
"Human," the Chondra said, insistent. "There is something I wish for you to see. Come."
Another time, Wax thought, turning from the entrance to Lost Credit Shaw and following Tensun. "Milan said that the Chondra don't come down here often. Why not? Isn't this your home?"
"It is a sacred place," the wolfhound said. "Yes, it is home, but also a prison, and so much more. Under the Lord Ruler, we needed this place for freedom to be ourselves. Outside, we were controlled, enslaved by men."
Bitter, Wax thought. Even after hundreds of years, this creature was pained by the life it had led. Did he blame humankind? Did Bleeder?
"We come here," Tensun said, "when the mood strikes us. Usually we come alone and infrequently. There are clubs up above where we can socialize now, being ourselves. Homes. Lives. The younger generations almost never visit this place. They prefer their lives as they are now, and don't wish to remember the past. I suppose I'm the same, though for different reasons."
Wax nodded, walking alongside the Chondra as they penetrated ever deeper into the twisting tunnels of the homeland. They passed many empty chambers, but some that held oddities, like two with old baskets and some discarded bones on the floor. Wax had been in his fair share of tunnels out in the roughs, but most of those had been some kind of man-made mine. These caverns were different. Those had smelled of dust and dirt, while this place somehow felt alive, of water and fungus, of patience. The tunnels were knobby yet smooth, like wax pulled beneath a long-burning candle. Holy ground. Everything else in the world, so far as he knew, had been completely remade during the Catasandra. But these caverns stretched back to eternity, as old as human memory. Older. Eventually, they reached a small chamber that didn't seem quite as organic as the others. Had it been shaped somehow by Chondra hands? Tensun settled down on his haunches in the entrance to the room. Wax's light glittered off the smooth, bulbous rock of the floor, which fell away in a series of pits. Perhaps 3 feet across, they looked like holes dug by prospectors foolishly hunting metals out in the roughs. Wax glanced at Tensoon.
"I passed by here on my way to meet you," the Condra said in his growling, half-human voice. "I smelled something wrong."
Smelled something? Wax couldn't catch any odd sense, but this whole place smelled strange to him. He stepped into the room, then noted something. One of the small pits was full. Were those sheets of paper? Yes, they were. As Wax knelt at the rim of the pit, he was surprised to find hundreds of sheets of paper inside, jagged on one edge as if they'd been ripped from a book. They contained cramped writing with numbered verses, the words of founding. Besides the normal writing, someone had scrawled all over these in brownish-red ink. Blood, Wax thought. It's blood. He set down his lantern, then reached down and picked up a page. Book 80, verses 27 through 50. Verses about Harmony's quest for truth. Someone, likely Bleeder, had written all over them the words, "Lies, lies, lies." Wax dug up other sheets. Most had something written on them, a word or phrase, though many were just smeared with blood. Something bothered Wax about it all, something that made his eye twitch. He couldn't say what it was. "I was there," one sheet read. "Nobody," said another. "It was," said another. He started laying them out. Tensoon, whom he'd almost forgotten, sniffed in the doorway. Wax glanced back. "Did you see these?"
"Yes,"
Tensoon said. "What do you make of them?"
"I did not stay long,"
the Condra said, then looked to the side.
"I do not spend time in this room, human. I am not fond of it."
This room. Wax felt cold. Was this the prison that Tensoon had been trapped in, locked away without bones, awaiting execution? Rusts. He was kneeling in a place that had decided the fate of the world. Wax stretched down, grabbing more of the sheets. It seemed like Bleeder had ripped apart an entire set of the words of founding, the unabridged version. Old edition, too, judging by the fact that it had been handwritten instead of printed. "You really knew her, didn't you?" Wax asked. "The Ascendant Warrior."
"I knew her," Tensoon said softly. "Near the end, I spent over an hour without my spikes, and so my memories degraded. However, most of what I lost was from the time right before my fall. Most of my memories of her are crisp."
Wax hesitated with stacks of pages in his hands. "What was she like? As a person, I mean."
"She was strong and vulnerable. All at once,"
Tensoon whispered.
"She was my last master. And my greatest. She had a way of pouring everything of herself into what she did. When she fought, she was the blade. When she loved, she was the kiss. In that regard, she was far more human than any I have known."
Wax found himself nodding as he settled the pages about him, in stacks based on whether they had words or not. The ones with fingerprints he set in their own stack. Perhaps they would be useful. Probably not. Bleeder was a shapeshifter, after all. Tensoon eventually padded up to him.
"They look," Tensoon said, inspecting the sheets, "like they might say something if you string them together."
"Yeah," Wax said, dissatisfied.
"What is wrong?"
"It's too much," Wax said, waving his hand at it. "Too convoluted, too sensational. Why would she write on a bunch of pages, then rip them out and leave them here?"
"Because she's mad."
"No," Wax said. "She's not that kind of mad. The way she's been working is too deliberate, too focused. Her motives might be insane,
but her methods have been careful.
How could he explain it? This case had his instincts fighting with one another. He tried again.
When someone leaves something like this behind, it means one of two things. They're sloppy, or they're trying too hard. She's not sloppy, but I don't think she's trying to be cute either, dangling clues and playing games. When I talked to her,
"You spoke with Pa'am?"
Tensun demanded, his ears perking up.
"When?"
"Earlier tonight," Wax said. "There was something regretful about her. She claimed to not be playing games, but this seems like a game. 1,000 discarded pages left to be put back together and form a clue?" He shook his head.
"I don't buy it. Madness or not, she had to know that other Chandra would eventually find this."
"Very well," Tensun said, settling back down.
"But she spoke to you as herself, not an imitation."
"Yes. Is that odd? You're doing it right now, and Milan seems to be acting no specific role either."
"We are not Pa'am," Tensun said. "As long as I've known her, she's been subject to the performance. I was like that too, years ago. I didn't know who I was if I was not imitating someone."
Wax looked across the sheets. "Freedom," one of them said in a scrawl across the page. "We'll give you freedom whether you," said another, only half of a thought.
"What was she like?" Wax asked. "Who is she, Guardian?"
"Hard to say," Tensun replied. "Pa'am was the Lord Ruler's pet Chandra, a slave to his will, and the contract we made with him. She ignored events surrounding the end of the world of Ash. She vanished, didn't return to the homeland. I assumed her dead, until she appeared among the survivors. Even then she separated herself from us, though she served Harmony, as we all did. Until nothing. Absence."
"Freedom," Wax said, tapping the page. "She talked about that with me. What does it mean?"
"I don't know," Tensun said, voice even more a growl than before. "She has betrayed everything we are. But then so did I. So perhaps we are a pair, she and I. Two of the oldest monsters remaining on this planet, now that many of the seconds have taken the escape of ending their own lives."
"Freedom," Wax whispered. "Someone else moves us."
"She left a note for me in the governor's mansion. She removed a politician's tongue to stop his lies, killed a priest through the eyes to stop him from looking,
seeing.
For who? For what?"
"She had been the Lord Ruler's Chandra, moved about and danced at his whims. And then, Harmony's servant?
She lived with his voice inside her head, knowing all along that he could take control of her. How would that feel? Would it make you remove one of your spikes? Would you be trying to bring that freedom to everyone? Misguided in your insanity, certain that the world needed saving?"
Wax stood up slowly.
"It's about Harmony."
"Lawman?"
"She's trying to bring down God himself."
"That's insane."
"Yes," Wax said, turning to the Chandra.
"It is."
He started to pace in the small room. "Speak to Harmony and find out something for me. Did Bleeder first leave because Harmony tried to take control of her at some point? Did that set her off?" A moment of silence.
"Yes," Tensun replied. "Harmony says he didn't try to control her directly. But he did push her very hard to do something she didn't want to do."
"She's been persistent about this idea that all people are controlled."
"Harmony, was she Bloody Tan? Was she wearing his body even back then? Was she there when I shot Lessie?"
She sees everyone as Harmony's puppets. In her eyes, the politicians are his mouth. She's bringing down the government for that reason. Religion? Harmony's eyes to watch over the people. She works to undermine that by creating strife between the religious sects.
Yes, Tensun said. In a way, it could be seen as a continuation of the first contract. Serve the Lord Ruler. Bring down the force that he worked to defeat. Harmony is half of that.
But what am I in this? Wax continued, only half listening to Tensun.
Why me? Why focus on...
No. Wrong question. What was she going to do next? Eyes? Tongue? Ears, maybe?
Pretend she's a step ahead of you, Wax told himself. Prepare for the worst.
He looked again at the sheets on the floor. She wanted Wax out of the way. An elaborate puzzle? It was a time waster, a distraction. She'd ripped out these sheets not to tease him, but to remove him from the investigation long enough to accomplish the next phase of her plan. She'd led him here with that dust on her robe. She'd planted it there for that purpose.
She knows, Wax said softly. She knows what you're going to do, Tensun. What you've done.
He felt cold and met the Chandra's inhuman eyes.
She's planned that you would send your Chandra to try to win back the hearts and minds of the people. That exposes you. Her next step is to bring them down.
Wayne wandered between two bonfires. Inside one, table and chair legs made sharp lines like the shadowy limbs of corpses being burned. The mists didn't get too close to the fires, though the smoke made a good imitator in the night. Like a beggar, dressed up so nice you only knew him for what he was when you got close enough to catch a proper whiff. Wayne leaned into one of the bonfires to light his cigar, though that required him to heal the skin of his arm as it burned. He smelled both of his own singed hair and of the scent of the fire. Polished furniture didn't burn clean. He liked feeling the heat, though. Made him feel alive. He had stopped filling his metal mines, hoping he had enough health for what was coming. He couldn't afford to be weak or sickly right now. Not with what was happening. He leaned back away from the flames and settled the cigar between his teeth. It was a fancy type, from the governor's own hidden stash. Wayne took a long puff before remembering that he hated the rusting things. Oh, well. He hadn't traded anything good for it. Just one of Wax's forks. The crowd gathering here in the square was the biggest he'd seen this night. They clumped in the bonfire light like a flock of ravens drawn to a kill. Wayne moved up to the back of the crowd and handed his cigar to someone there. He left her standing, baffled, as he dove into the crowd. With a crowd this big, you couldn't move through them, but with them. You had to pull a crowd on like a good coat, snug and tight. Then let the cloth give you some direction. Wayne shuffled when the people shuffled, and shouted at the proper points, giving just the right drunken slur to his speech. He gave back a friendly elbow when one nudged him, and before too long he neared the front. Here, above everyone else, a shirtless fellow in trousers and suspenders stood atop a fountain statue, holding on to the survivor's spear for balance, his other fist raised toward the crowd.
"They rob us blind!" the man shouted.
"Aye, that's true," Wayne thought, shouting along with the crowd's roar of agreement.
"They expect us to work long hours every day, but then when it ain't convenient for them, they just cut us loose and don't care none if we starve!"
"Yeah, they do," Wayne thought, joining in the cursing and shouting.
"They do each other favors," the man bellowed. "They suck us dry! Then gather to throw lavish parties."
"I've been to those parties," Wayne thought. "Good sandwiches."
"Would the survivor have stood for this?"
"Probably not," Wayne admitted. As the crowd surged around him, Wayne folded his arms and thought. Sure, bringing down a homicidal shapeshifter was important and all, but rusts. This seemed a bad time to be hanging around with Connors and noblemen. Listening to this speech, he was half inclined to string himself up, which was really disturbing since he was generally suicidal only in the mornings. He was about to turn away and flow back toward the mansion to talk with Milan about this, when something changed. A new figure climbed up onto the statue. An older, balding man who was a little thick around the waist, but in a friendly type way. He wore ornate robes that frayed like a mist coat at the bottom. A survivorist priest? The older man held up a pleading hand, and the fellow who had been shouting bowed his head in acknowledgement and stepped back. Beneath the giant image of the survivor, his priest would be heard. Wayne felt a disturbance stir within him, like his stomach discovering he just fed it a bunch of rotten apples. Religion worried him. It could ask men to do things they'd otherwise never do.
"I come to you," the priest said into the night. "Understanding and sympathetic. But I implore you, do not invoke the survivor's name for looting and destruction. There is a way to fight back, and I will join you in it. But these are not the days of the Lord Ruler's tyranny. You have the ability to make your voice heard. You can send advocates to the government for you."
The crowd hushed. A few men shouted out expletives, explaining exactly what they wanted to do to the governor, but most grew quiet.
"The survivor said that we should smile," the priest pled. "He taught that we should not let our sorrows drag us down, no matter how bad life became."
The mood of the crowd was shifting. They shuffled instead of shouted. Wayne relaxed. Well, maybe religion was good for something other than fancy clothes and weird hats. If that priest defused this group, Wayne would buy him a drink, he would. And buying drinks for priests was great because they usually wouldn't drink theirs, so you got two for yourself to... Wait. Why was that fellow in the suspenders, the one who had talked before, sneaking up behind the priest, raising his hand as if to...
"No!"
Wayne shouted, shoving through the crowd toward the fountain. He froze time, which caused quite a mess of confusion in the people around him, but it didn't do much. All that let him do was stand there feeling helpless, knowing the priest was too far away to save. The fellow in the suspenders stood just behind the gentle old man, hand raised, knife glittering in the firelight. Except that it wasn't no knife. It was a needle. Wayne dropped his speed bubble. The needle plunged down, striking the priest in the back. The round-faced man jerked upright, and then his flesh started to melt. It turned translucent, his eyes drooping out of their sockets, crystal bones beneath, glittering in the light of the bonfires.
"Look," the bare-chested man said. "See what they send to try to placate you? The faceless immortals serve the nobility. This was no priest, but one of their minions. They want you to believe you're free, that their democracy works for you. But all that surrounds you is lies."
Wayne gaped as the priest, no, the Chandra, struggled to stand upright and speak, but that made it worse. The protesters shouted, their rowdiness back with renewed strength, save for near Wayne, where the people were still confused as to why time had stopped for them. A woman in a dirty skirt eyed him.
"Hey, aren't you that guy from the Ruffs?"
Wayne grimaced, backing away. On the fountain, the leader spotted him and interrupted his diatribe. He pointed right at Wayne.
"One of them is here," he shouted. "They send constables into our midst. They're all around, controlling you."
Basically, the entire crowd turned to look at Wayne.
Well, hell.
The lower left quadrant of the broadsheet, The House Record. The sinister soiree continued. For any person in the room, had I not bested the tribes at the pits of Eltonia? Was I not the first to bring back tales of the slopes of the Ashmounts, now gone green with vegetation? And wasn't it I that had domesticated the fabled long-necked horses of the plains of Cameron?
"I shall not lower this gun," said the man, "until you pay for your crimes."
My enhanced senses picked up a faint tremor in the man's speech. I noticed the almost imperceptible flicks of his eyes to the right and left. This wasn't one of the Cobblesgilder henchmen, as I'd at first thought. He was a man looking for revenge, and he wasn't entirely sure if I was the one from whom he should exact it. "Let us talk this through peaceably," I suggested. I gently removed Lady Levant's trembling fingers from my arm. "All will be solved, my lady," I said, detecting a faint gasp in her breathing as my fingers brushed hers for so short a moment. Mustaches straightened. "You killed my brother 3 years back in the roughs near Covingtar," he said. I needed time to think on his accusation, so I stepped forward, raised my hands in the air and said, "As you can see, I am unarmed." I turned in a circle, displaying to the crowd that I in fact held no sidearm. And yes, bravely I turned my back on Mustaches, trusting in his uncertainty of my identity. As I turned, I thought through my predicament. It was true that some 3 years back I had found myself in the vicinity of Covingtar, but had I killed someone's brother there? No doubt I had left many a man brotherless, but never intentionally. The very thought of killing a man for the express purpose of leaving another man brotherless is highly repugnant to me. "I am not the man you seek," I said, raising my glass for another sip, because, by the faceless, if I was going to die, I would do it drinking fine Chablis Montreux 328. The gun barrel shook more. If my gambit failed, I would sport yet another bullet scar on my strapping abdomen. Skin and muscle would heal, but the finely woven shirt had been a gift from the daughter of the owner of Gillis and Gillis, on the corner of Canton Avenue and Tronchow Way, tailors of exquisite and tasteful dress shirts for fashionable and high society types. I did not wish it to be spoiled with my worthy blood. "Then who are you?" asked Mustaches, his gun's barrel dropping more. The moment of danger was not yet over, but my own breathing evened out. My enhanced senses found Mustache's gazelle-quick heartbeat slowing to a more reasonable pace. "Gentleman Jack," I said with humility, "surely you have heard of me?"
"So you ain't that Waxillium Ladrian fellow?"
"By the Survivor, no!" My anger rose without warning. Many a man had met the righteous end of my knuckles for such a comment, but here in the barely civilized reaches of the outer cities, I knew I mustn't punish this ill-informed yokel for his folly. "My good man, no," I said more calmly, and letting out a generous laugh. He shakily reholstered his pistol. A crooked smile began beneath those knife-like mustaches of his. I approached him like I would a prairie lion, but heartbeats later I was slapping him on the back like an old friend, and narrowly avoiding the end of one of his mustaches, piercing me through the right earlobe, a hole that no doubt would make the Honorable Handerwim jealous of the metal mines I might hang there. "A drink!" I roared. "A drink for my friend! For I too would pull a gun on Waxillium Ladrian, were I to meet him in person!" Danger averted, Lady Levant came again to my side, a tinkle of laughter on her lips. Then I noticed over the crowd two pairs of waving arms that I immediately recognized as Handerwim's. In trying to get my attention over the pressing crowd in the room, he shook his arms in so aggravated a fashion that one of his metal mines flew from his wrist and landed like an outer city's cataract diver into the sparkle punch, spraying red droplets all in a mottle upon Lady Levant's pastel satin evening gown. My dependable steward's convulsing could only be interpreted one way. During my diversion with mustaches, the Lord Mistborn's only remaining buttons had been stolen, swapped for the indistinguishable duplicates, and neither I nor Handerwim had been in a position to intercept the perpetrators. I needed my enhanced senses to seek out the thieves, but I had just used my last modicum of tin to help defuse Mustache's desire to bring me face to face with Old Iron Eyes. I pushed through the crowd toward the only source of reliable tin in the room, the Lord Mistborn's clasps of wuzzing, which I now knew to be counterfeit. Continued next week. The best of the basin. Gentleman Jack recommends a Chablis 328 with a box of Doxanar brand cigars. All Gentleman Jack's adventures from the pages of the House Record, compiled for the first time and annotated by his faithful Terraceman scribe. Available now at fine bookshops in all octants.
21.
Ash Falls, Tensun said as he ran alongside Wax through the tunnels of the Chondra homeland.
I've told Harmony to pass the word to my fellows. We will stop our efforts immediately, but he says it might be too late.
Wax nodded, holding his lantern and puffing from exertion.
We're Harmony's ears, Tensun growled. That fits with her theme, doesn't it? We listen, move among you, report back to God. She's going to try to deafen him.
Wax nodded again.
That's pointless, Tensun said. She can't stop Harmony. Even with all of this, she's just a child throwing rocks at a mountain to try to move it.
Yeah, Wax said, scrambling over some rubble. Pieces of the Chondra homeland had obviously suffered from being shoved about in the earth during the Catasandra. Walls had collapsed, then had lain here, broken for hundreds of years.
But she's not really trying to kill God. She just wants to free people from him, in her twisted way.
Free them, Tensun said.
He was silent for a time.
Emotion. That's it, isn't it? Bin liberated Kolos by making them feel powerful emotions. It gave an opening into their souls. Let her break through another's control and seize the creatures.
That's what the old stories say, Wax replied. Good to have confirmation.
Humans aren't hemallergic creations like Kolos. Powerful emotions won't free them from Harmony.
Sure it will, Wax said. At least in Bleeder's eyes. If you're in a rage, you're not following Harmony's careful plans. You're out of control. She's going to drive this city to madness in an insane attempt to liberate it.
Ruin, Tensun growled. I may have to leave you behind, lawman. I must reach my people quickly and speak with them about what is happening.
Fine, Wax said. But I might keep up better than you assume, so long as I...
A shrill howl echoed through the corridor, so chilling that Wax pulled to a stop. He drew vindication, lantern held high in his offhand. The howl was joined by others, a terrible cacophony, each sound jarring against the others. Tensun leaned low, growling as the howls faded.
What the hell was that?
Wax said.
I have never heard its like before, human.
Aren't you over 1,000 years old?
Something like that, Tensun said.
Holy hell, Wax repeated.
Another way out?
The Chondra took off, leading him back the way they had come. The howls started up again, louder. The tight tunnels and uneven stones suddenly seemed far more confining. Wax ran, and despite his earlier bravado, found he had real trouble keeping up with Tensun. The stone around them didn't contain any metals, at least not in a pure enough form for him to push on. Besides, the tunnels twisted and turned too much for long pushes. So he ran, holding on to his lantern with sweating fingers, listening as the things behind seemed to grow more excited. Distracted as he was, he almost crashed into Tensun when he caught up to him standing still in the tunnel.
What?
Wax asked, panting from his run.
It smells wrong ahead, Tensun said. They're waiting for us.
Great, Wax said. What are they?
They smell like men, Tensun said.
More howls came from behind.
Those, Wax said, are men?
Come,
Tensun said, turning and scrambling away, his claws scratching on stone. Wax followed.
Another way out?
He asked again. Tensun didn't answer, instead leading them in a sprint through small caverns, around corners, through tunnels. They stopped at an intersection, Tensun considering their options while Wax fingered his gun nervously. He swore he could see something moving down the tunnel they'd left behind, the one where Tensun claimed to have spotted an ambush.
Tensun, he said, nervous.
This way,
the Chondra said, dashing off. Wax followed, entering a longer tunnel. Perfect. He let himself lag behind, holding up the lantern, trying to get a glimpse of whatever was following. His light reflected from eyes in the shadows. figures that were bent low, scrambling on all fours, moving in a distinctly inhuman way. Sweating, Wax dropped a shell casing and shoved it with his foot into a cleft in the rock. He pushed, throwing himself down the corridor to catch up with Tensoon, landing just before they took a corner at speed.
"They're not human," Wax said. "Not completely."
"Hemallergy," Tensoon said. "This is terrible. Baum, she has gone further than I had assumed. She doesn't just kill. She ruins."
"They're almost upon us," Wax said, clutching gun and lantern. "How do we get out?"
"We don't," Tensoon said, ducking to the side and into a small chamber. "We fight."
Wax followed, but stopped in the doorway, gun at the ready. They'd passed this room before, or one like it. It was filled with small baskets. Glancing at them now, he could see they were full of bones. The things chasing them had started yipping, but he could hear them scrambling on the stone, could hear them breathing in excited gasps as they drew close. Inside the room, Tensoon transformed. It happened in a burst, the Chondra's skin sloughing off his canine bones and splashing to the ground like a bucket of slop tossed out the back of a kitchen. The muscles and melting skin slapped against one of the baskets, tipping it, dumping bones. Milan had said he was fast, but that word didn't begin to describe the sudden motion as Tensoon absorbed the bones. Arms sprouted from the side of his mass, then lifted it into the air even as legs formed beneath, thick like those of a wrestler. A skull emerged like a bubble rising through molasses, filling in with muscles stretched against bone, a jaw shifting into place. In seconds, a short but robust figure stood in the chamber. The face of stretched skin and muscle reminded Wax of a colossus, but those forearms were like hammers, and the chest, superhumanly powerful. It was nude, though the crotch lacked genitals of either variety. Wax looked back down the corridor outside and raised his pistol, sweating. The things prowled closer. Heads emerged from the darkness, faces that twisted human features into something more canine. He counted 5 total. These creatures were no longer bipedal, but traces of humanity laced them. Fingers that were too long, hands with opposable thumbs. The joints bent the wrong way at the elbows and knees, and the eyes. The eyes were dead. Pure black.
"What has she done to you?"
Wax whispered at them. The creatures didn't respond. Either they could not think, could not speak, or didn't care to do either. Wax fired upward, half hoping that the sound would scare the things away, send them scuttling back into the night. The greater part of him hoped they would remain, so he could finish off every last one of the poor bastards. The single shot rang loud in the tunnel, but the beasts didn't flee. Instead, they surged forward, their reluctance giving way to frenzy. Wax leveled Vindication and unloaded at the first creatures, aiming for skulls. Flashes of gunfire lit the tunnel. Though his bullets tore off skin and left streaks of bleeding muscle, not one of the creatures dropped. Wax ducked back into the room, holstering Vindication and setting his lantern on an outcropping.
"Their skulls have been thickened," he shouted to Tensoon while reaching for his Starion.
The Chondra stepped past him, both lithe and powerful. Wax could almost hear the muscles constricting, pulling taut beneath that skin. As the first creature entered, Tensoon smashed it on the side of the head, pinning it to the wall with one hand. Then he stepped back and raised his foot to crush the skull against the rocks. The others leaped over Tensoon, dragging him down, biting his flesh. He grabbed at one, ripping it free by the hind legs, and hurling it away. Wax fired, aiming for the eyes.
"They have been created to fight you,"
Tensoon growled from the ground, where he wrestled with one of the creatures while others tore at him.
"Flee! Your modern weapons are useless here, lawman."
"Like hell they are," Wax thought, dropping his Starion and reaching to the large holster on his thigh, bringing out his short-barreled shotgun. He pulled out a handful of shells and tossed them to the floor with a sound like rain. Then he waded in, slapping the first monster that came at him across the face with the shotgun. It flinched, then howled, baring rows of uneven teeth. Wax shoved the shotgun into its mouth and fired. Bits of it colored the wall, and as it fell, thrashing, it knocked over baskets, spilling bones to the rock floor. The one creature's death caught the attention of others, who turned from the bleeding Tensoon and charged Wax. Wax naturally preferred the pistol,
A handgun was an extension of one's focus, a weapon of precision, like a thrown coin in anti-verdant days. The soul of the coin shot, his will made manifest. The shotgun was something different. It wasn't an extension of focus or will, but it did do a good job of representing his rage. Wax shouted, slamming his shotgun across the face of one beast and pushing on the barrel, giving the swing incredible momentum. The blow flung the creature to the side as Wax spun and pumped his gun, then blasted at the leg of the next one, ripping its arm free at the shoulder and sending it face first to the stone. He leaped over the next one that came for him, pushing on a fallen bullet for lift. He fired a shotgun slug down into the beast's back, stunning it, then multiplied his weight and landed with a crunch. The thing thrashed and writhed beneath him as another leaped at his throat. He pumped and shot it in the head, then pushed on the slug. His weight still increased, draining his metal mind at a furious rate. That bullet didn't stop at the skull as the others had. It split bone and made a mess of the brain. Wax sidestepped that corpse as it flopped beside him, then swung his shotgun upward into the head of the last beast coming for him. It flipped backward, exposing the belly. Wax fired three times, emptying the shotgun. The underbelly was soft, as he'd hoped. The thing went down. He stood, breathing deeply, the rhythm of the fight having consumed him. Nearby, Tensun rolled over, the wounds to his arms and sides resealing. He had killed another of the things by ripping it in half. His eyes were wide as he regarded Wax. His bloodied face looked as inhuman as those of the creatures they'd just fought. Tensun climbed to his feet, surveying the wreckage. The lantern still burned calmly, illuminating bones scattered across the floor, and masses that had once, horribly, been human, but now just twitched. Wax felt sick. He called them things in his head, but these had been people. Tensun was right. What Bleeder had done here was worse, somehow, than even her murders.
"I will need to ask Harmony," Tensun said, "if I have failed him in killing this day."
His voice was the same gravelly growl as before, when he'd inhabited the wolfhound's body. "Why would he care?" Wax said, still sick. "He uses me to kill all the time."
"You are his ruin," Tensun said. "I am his preservation."
Wax stood in silence amid the dead and dying and lowered his shotgun, trying to suppress the immediate feeling of indignation he felt. Was that all he was to Harmony? A killer? A destroyer?
"Still," Tensun said, picking his way through the room and speaking as if he didn't realize the insult he'd just offered, "I do not think Harmony will mind what I have done. These poor souls."
He knelt and prodded at one of the bodies Wax had killed. Tensun came up with a thin piece of metal, silvery and perhaps as long as a finger. Did it have a red cast to it, or was that just the blood? He used steel sight and found that while he could see the spike, the line was duller than it should have been. Hemallergy.
"One spike," Tensun said, turning it over. "Any more and Harmony might have been able to control these beasts. How could such a change be affected by a single spike? This is a level of hemallergy beyond my understanding, lawman."
Wax shook his head, checking on the creatures. Not to see if they were still a threat, but to make sure he didn't leave one of them here to die a protracted death. He found one woman still alive, paralyzed by a shot into her back. She watched him with those eyes, shaped like a person's, yet alien and dark. Whatever else had happened to these people, they should have been able to keep their eyes. Wax put his gun to the woman's eye and fired, up into the brain. Then he closed his eyes and offered, what? A prayer to Harmony? Harmony hadn't helped these people.
"I have done something to help,"
the words whispered to him from the past, a memory of the last time Harmony had spoken to him.
"I sent you."
Wax wasn't certain if that was enough this time. "Tell me you'll see these people buried," Wax said.
"I will,"
Tensun said, as a howl sounded in the distance.
"More come. Do we fight here or run?"
Can you get us out? Wax asked, reloading the shotgun.
Perhaps. Not by a conventional method, but there could be a way.
Then let's go, Wax said. This is another distraction, Tensoon. Those creatures only came for us when we left the other chamber.
Tensoon nodded, dropping his body to the floor and absorbing the wolfhound's bones again. Only seconds passed before he'd restored himself, save for the hair. That started to sprout from the skin as Tensoon moved to the door, coming in waves as the Condra's body arranged it and pushed it out. Wax grabbed his lantern and they fled, Tensoon again leading the way.
There he goes, boys!
Wayne yelled, pointing into the darkness.
I saw that dirty Connor right ahead. You go that way, I'll head around the other way, and we'll trap him between us, we will.
The small force of men with him, armed with wrenches and brooms, split off in a cheering, clangorous mass of spit and vengeance. Wayne egged them on while backward jogging in the other direction. Eventually he slowed, finally alone, and shook his head. Not bad fellows, for all the fact that they had the combined wits of a brick. Wayne spun a dueling cane in his fingers, rounding back through an alleyway and popping out near the governor's mansion. He didn't go toward the front. More and more angry people were gathering there, and some might recognize him from before. On his head he wore a newsboy's cap, his other hat carefully stowed in a bush along the way. That was fine. He liked this new cap well enough. But he felt naked in another way. He was out of bend alloy. Completely dry. That was bad. No more stopping time unless Wax had an extra vial for him. The fellow often carried one. Wayne slipped around the mansion, intending to head toward the back doors where he hoped the guards would let him in. He'd wasted time, far too much, getting away from that crowd. The sight of that poor Condra melting in front of everyone else haunted him. Rusts. He wasn't sure which side of the argument he came down on, but at least he wasn't going around melting people for an audience. Besides, for the moment he figured he'd choose the side that wasn't actively trying to kill him. He strolled and stuck a new ball of gum into his mouth. Then he hesitated, mists swirling around him, the mansion looming before him like a mesa in the roughs, lit up all white. He heard a voice drifting toward him. The accent was wrong. Just slightly wrong, but in a profound way. And suddenly he knew who Bleeder was impersonating. The howls were distant from Wax, but they haunted him more than they had during the first chase, for now he knew what made them. If he survived this, he would have to see something done for these creatures. Tensoon conducted them through the intestines of the homeland, eventually reaching a wall full of cracks. Wax raised his lantern, inspecting it. The wolfhound beside him had a pelt that was missing hair in patches.
Well, Wax said, inspecting the dead end.
We have been watching this spot, Tensoon said. It cracked long ago, and the cracks seem to have widened over the years. If it opens, it will provide another path into the homeland, and we wish to be aware of each of those.
Wax ran his fingers along the cracks in the stone wall. Air moved through them, he thought, catching a whiff of something more. Rotten. More like the city he knew, familiar and disgusting all at once. He tapped his metal mind, increasing his weight, then threw his shoulder against the wall. This was tricky, as his strength hadn't increased except in its ability to lift his own limbs and manipulate his heavier muscles. That lent him some ability, but mostly he had to try to force things just right so that he was falling into the wall as much as pushing on it. He finally got the correct leverage, shoving through the cracked rock and causing a clatter. He was able to pick his way through into a narrow rift, like a very thin slot canyon out in the roughs. The walls were slick with water, and knobby as in so much of this underground realm.
What now? Wax asked.
Now we climb, human, Tensoon said.
He melted again, dumping his bones and fur to the ground, becoming a group of muscles. Here, in these narrow confines, that was an advantage. Tensoon was able to push on both walls and start sliding up the crack, filling holes and clefts with his mass, then using his muscles to propel himself upward. A bag, like a stomach, had formed around the wolfhound bones, and he carted these up behind him. It was grotesque, yet fascinating. This was the natural state of the Chondra, the sludge-like collection of muscles that at times acted human. Of course, Wax thought, starting to climb. What am I but a pile of blood and meat that gets up and walks around? His climb was difficult, particularly with the lantern, though decreasing his weight substantially helped. After only a short time, he heard the creatures come in below, howling and scrambling. His heart beat more quickly, but they didn't seem to have much luck climbing. He continued to inch upward until, in his haste for a handhold, he fumbled with the lantern and dropped it. It bumped and clanged against the stones before smashing down below. The light went out. In that moment, Wax realized he was buried in the earth, clinging to rocks in the darkness. The walls seemed to press against him, and twisted monsters howled below and sought his blood. He gasped in sudden panic. Then his eyes adjusted, and a soft blue light revealed the world to him. He wasn't trapped. There was a way out above. He could see it by the patina of blue fungus growing on the walls, giving a gentle light to everything.
"Harmony made sure it spread here," Tensun's voice said from above. "He wanted to make certain that no person was ever trapped in darkness in this place again."
Wax forced himself to continue upward. He recognized where he was now, from the stories. The holes in the walls that he used as handholds had once been overgrown with crystals, and within, geodes containing a bead of the lost metal. Legendary Atium. He was climbing the pits of Hath-Sin themselves.
"Peace, lawman," Tensun said from above. "Keep climbing."
Had he heard Wax's breathing quicken? He steadied himself and continued. This place was no longer a prison. No more did it cut and lacerate as it had done to the survivor's arms. The climb was actually easy with all those holes. The sounds from below grew softer. Finally, he crawled from the crevice into a section of man-made tunnel, one of the city's sewers. The crack behind him was just a thin cleft in the rock that gave no hint of its ancient origin. Wax shivered, breathing in the awful stench of the sewers, but still glad to be free. Tensun convulsed as a mass nearby, then formed into a wolfhound again.
"I can see why Pa'an might want me distracted and unable to stop my people from being caught in her trap," he said. "But what happened below, that was not for me, but you, human. What was she trying to distract you from?"
Wax didn't reply, but could think of only one reason. Once she dealt with the Chondra, her plan would be ready for the final steps. She'd need to drive the people of the city further into a frenzy, freeing them, as she saw it, sending them forth as a mob to rage and hate, destroying Elendil. The governor was planning to speak to the people of the city. Bleeder hadn't succeeded in killing him yet, and Wax suspected he knew why. Because when she murdered him, she wanted an audience. Part 3. 22. Mist seemed to burn in the night, like clouds before the sun. Wax dropped through it, slamming to the steps of the governor's mansion, surprising the guards there. Constables by the uniforms rather than the normal guards. Good. They'd been running low on the ladder. Wax stood up straight, turning and regarding the crowd gathering in front of the mansion. Constables with rifles made an uneasy barrier between them and the building. Nearby, workers erected a small stage on the steps. Aradel supervised, though judging from his sour expression he was rather displeased with the governor's plan. Wax agreed. Addressing the crowd would be playing right into Bleeder's hands. He grabbed one of the constables. "I assume there hasn't been another attempt on the governor's life?"
"No, sir," the constable said. "He's in his study, sir."
Wax nodded and barged into the mansion, trailing wisps of mist behind him. He stalked toward the back, and in the hallway, Marisi intercepted him, taking him by the arm.
"Kolos Blood,"
she said, giving him the password he'd given her, proving she wasn't a Chondra.
"Nighttime summer," Wax said back, authenticating himself. "You need to do something about that crowd, Marisi. They're going to rip this city down."
We are working on it. Have you seen Wayne?
No, why?
Milan says he went out to inspect the protesters. That was over half an hour ago. Nobody has seen him since.
He'll turn up, Wax said. I need to talk to the governor.
Marcy nodded, but held onto his arm as he tried to walk toward the study.
Wax,
she said softly.
He's corrupt. Really corrupt. I found proof.
Wax drew in a deep breath.
Let's survive this night. Then we'll do something about that.
My thoughts are similar,
Marcy said. But I think Bleeder wants to put us in a difficult position. Perhaps she wants to force us to let the governor die.
Not going to happen, Wax said. We'll hand him over to the courts, but not a mob.
Have you checked on your sister?
No,
Marcy said. But I've been intending to.
Do so, Wax said. I'll look in on your father after talking to the governor. I don't want either showing up as an unexpected hostage.
As long as it isn't me for a change,
Marcy said with a grimace. Milan is wearing the body of the guard with the sling. She's furious the governor won't let her or the others in. I'm going to go see if I can track down Wayne. Wouldn't be surprised to find him on the front row of the mob.
She let go of his arm and headed toward the exit. Marcy, Wax said after her.
Hmm?
The uniform, he said. It suits you. Don't know if I've had a chance to mention that.
She blushed. She was Marcy, after all, before continuing. Wax turned and strode down the hallway toward the door to the governor's study. Milan lounged there with a group of three other guards.
Nobody is to enter, lawman, one of them said, with an annoyed tone. He's been in there composing a speech for the last hour. He won't...
Wax pushed past them and tried the door, which was locked. He could hear Innate's voice inside going over a speech. Wax increased his weight and flung the door open with alomancy, splintering the doorframe. Innate stood inside, holding a pad of paper and pacing as he talked. He froze mid-stride and spun on Wax, then relaxed visibly.
You could have knocked, the governor said.
And you could have ignored the knock, Wax said, walking in and swinging the door shut behind him. It didn't latch, of course, after what Wax had done.
What do you think you're doing, Innate? You could have been killed in here, quietly, alone without anyone to help. And what would they have done?
Innate demanded, tossing his pad onto his desk. He walked up, then spoke more softly.
Wind's whisper.
Drunken steam, Wax said back, latest passphrases exchanged. Innate was authentic.
Locking your guards out was foolhardy. They would have fought for you, protected you. We chased her off one time before.
You chased her off, Innate said, walking back to his desk and picking up his pad.
The rest were useless. Even poor Drim.
He went back to his pacing, speaking the lines of his speech to himself and practicing emphasis. Wax fumed, feeling dismissed. This was the man they struggled to protect? Wax made his way to the window. It was open, surprisingly letting in wisps of mist. They didn't travel far. He'd heard legends of the mist's filling rooms, but that rarely happened. He leaned against the window, looking out at the darkness, listening with half an ear to Innate's speech. It was inflammatory and dismissive. He claimed to feel the problems the people had, but called them peasants. This would just make things worse.
She wants that, Wax thought. She wants to free the city from harmony by making it angry.
She knew what Innate was going to say.
Of course she knew.
She'd been leading them around this entire time. Every clue Wax had found so far had been carefully planted for him. So what did he do? Stop Innate's speech? What if that was what she wanted? He tapped his finger on the windowsill. Tap, tap, squish. He looked down, then blinked. A wad of chewed gum had been stuck here. Wax lifted his finger and, as he contemplated it, something started to fall into place. Something he'd been missing. Bleeder had set this all up from the start. Wax's suspicions had begun because she'd deliberately alerted him by wearing Bloody Tan's face. That had been a conscious play on her part, a way to start the festivities. Everything was moving on her timetable. Bleeder had had everything already in place when this night arrived. She'd been planning this for a long time. Far longer than he'd assumed. So where was the best place to hide? Rusts. Wax reached for his gun and spun.
He found himself facing down Governor Innate, who had taken out a sidearm and leveled it.
"Damn it, Wax," the governor said. "Just a few minutes more, and I'd have had this. You see too far. You can always see a little too far."
Wax froze, hand on his gun. He met the governor's eyes and hissed out slowly.
"You knew the passphrase," Wax whispered. "But of course you did. I gave it to you. When did you kill him? How long has the city been ruled by an impostor?"
"Long enough."
"The governor wasn't your target. You think bigger than that. I should have seen. But Drim...
He was in the safe room when you entered below. Is that why you killed him?"
"No. He'd have known you were gone." "He knew all along," Bleeder said. "He was mine. But tonight, I killed him because of you, Wax. You'd shot me up."
"You had on the governor's clothing underneath the cloak," Wax said.
"Rusts, I'd bloodied you."
"So you needed an excuse for why the governor was covered in blood? An excuse to pull up your shirt and staunch a wound?" She held the gun on him, immobile. The weapon didn't register to his allomancy. Aluminum. She was prepared, of course. But she seemed torn. She didn't want to kill him. She'd never wanted to kill him for some reason. So Wax yelled for help. It was risky, but nothing ever ended well when you obeyed the person with the gun on you. As he'd suspected, Bleeder didn't shoot at him as the door burst open. Wax pulled out his gun and fired at Bleeder to distract her as he dug into his gun belt for the last needle that Melon had given him. The guards turned their guns toward Wax and started firing.
"Idiot,"
he thought, throwing himself toward the governor's desk for cover. "Of course they'd do that."
"Wait," he said. "The governor has been taken. Don't—"
Bleeder gunned down the guards. Wax rolled behind the desk, but still heard it as they cried out in shock. Their own governor, so far as they knew, shooting them down. Wax winced, cursing. Those deaths were upon him.
"I guess the rest of the constables will be upon us soon," Bleeder said. "They're not free yet. Neither are you, despite how I've tried."
Wax peeked up over the desk, then ducked down again as she swung the gun toward him. The governor's face was twisted in a mask of anger and frustration.
"Why couldn't you have given me a little longer?" she demanded. "So close. Now I have to kill you. Claim you were the Chandra and blame you for shooting my guards. That way I can still talk to the crowd. Free them."
Yet she didn't come for him. She still seemed upset. Best to take advantage of that.
"Milan, go!"
Wax shouted, then pushed on the nails in the floor, flinging himself up into the air. One of the corpses at Bleeder's feet grabbed her around the legs. Wax pushed off the wall, leaping toward Bleeder. She growled, then slapped his hand as he landed, knocking the needle free.
Rusts, she was strong.
She kicked Milan off as Wax dove for the fallen needle. She became a blur. As he tried to grab the needle, Bleeder snatched it and spun around, slamming it down into Milan's shoulder. It was done in an eye blink. Then she lurched to a stop. She seemed jarred by the motion. Her metal mind storage, at long last, had run dry. Wax pulled out his gun and fired, lying with his back on the floor. The bullets ripped her skin, but did nothing else. Nearby, Milan's shape distorted, face drooping and the skin going transparent. Wax lay on the ground, his emptied gun pointed at Bleeder, whose skin reformed from the wounds. They stared at one another for an extended moment before boots in the hallway outside made Bleeder curse, then dash for the window. Wax grabbed his other gun, following, then threw himself down as shots sounded outside. He waited a moment, then glanced up, but didn't spot her in the swirling mists. Wax cursed, rolling his arm in its socket. Rusts. That bullet hole he'd taken earlier in the night was bleeding again, and the pain was returning. He thought he'd chewed enough painkiller to keep it away.
"You all right?"
he asked Milan, who had managed to sit up.
"Yeah," she said, though the word was mangled by her melted face. "I made them do this to me once to test it out. I'll be fine in a few minutes."
"Thanks for the save," Wax said, anxiously scanning the room for hidden compartments with his steel sight. Quivering lines in the closet. Could he be so lucky? He rushed over and yanked it open. Wayne, tied securely and gagged, tumbled out and hit the floor with a thump. He was alive, thank Harmony. Wax knelt down, sighed in relief, and loosened the gag. Wayne looked like he'd been stabbed in the leg and his metal mines had been stripped away so he couldn't heal, but he was alive.
Wax,
Wayne said.
It's the governor. Bugger's got the same A as Milan.
I know, Wax said. You're lucky. She probably wanted to harvest your metal mind abilities with spikes, otherwise she'd have killed you right off. Why didn't you warn anyone?
Was going to, but I needed to check first. Got too close to the window and she rushed and came right out for me. Had knocked me upside the head, stripped off my metal mines, and had me over her shoulder all in an eye blink. Drugged me up here after, real quiet-like. You get her?
No, Wax said, working on Wayne's bonds. She ran off. Gunshots sounded outside.
And you ain't chasing her down?
Had to check on you first.
I'm fine, Wayne said. Stop untying me and look in my pocket.
Wax felt at Wayne's pocket, pulling out a small pouch.
From Renette, Wayne said.
Wax removed a single bullet cartridge. He held it up as a tense set of constables, led by Maracy, piled into the room. The newcomers called for an explanation. Wax left them to interrogate Wayne, instead seeking the mists once more. 23. Wax was a bullet in the night, rushing through the mists and disturbing them with his passing. He had become the hunter rather than the game, though the transition might have taken too long. He soared upward first to get a view of the area. An ever-growing crowd surrounded the governor's mansion, roaring, calling for change, or perhaps just blood. Would he bring down Bleeder only to find her victorious in a city destroyed? He couldn't worry about that at the moment. Instead, he sought signs, clues, a story. Nobody passed, even at night, without leaving a trail. Perhaps it would be too faint for him to locate, but it would exist. There. A group of people pulling away from the mansion instead of crowding toward it. Wax landed in a storm, mist coat flaring. This was the mansion's garden, near a large worker's shed. Wax studied the pattern of people moving away. The gunfire just a moment ago, he thought. It wasn't to shoot someone, but to clear the crowd. She was out of ferrochemical speed and fleeing frantically, and it opened fire into the air to clear this pocket of people. As he listened, he picked out cries of confusion, some people claiming the constables had opened fire on the crowd. Others claimed they'd seen the governor himself running, trying to escape the mansion. Wax loaded Vindication with a single bullet Renette had sent, placing it in one of the special chambers he could quickly spin to at will. Then he inched open the door to the shed, crouching beside the doorway so as not to present a profile. The mists were bright with torchlight this night, but that light didn't penetrate to the dark shed. Wax searched through the shadows until he saw something. A bone? Yes, and draped over it cloth. He picked out a fallen cravat, a white buttoning shirt, the governor's clothing. Bleeder had stashed another body in here and had fled to swap into it. How fast was she? Milan had said that Bleeder could change faster than she could, but that nobody was as quick as Tensoon. That didn't tell him much. Milan had taken minutes, Tensoon seconds. Wax held Vindication beside his head and slipped through the doorway. If he could find Bleeder in mid-transformation...
I can still free you,
a voice whispered from the darkness inside.
Perhaps I have lost the city, but I didn't come here for them. Not at first. I came for you.
Why me? Wax asked, searching furiously through the darkness, palms sweating as he held Vindication.
Damn it, creature, why me?
I have deafened them, Bleeder whispered. I have cut out his tongue, pierced his eyes, but still he can act. You are his hands, Waxillium Ladrian. He may be deaf, blind, and mute, but still, with you, he can move his pawns.
I'm my own man, Bleeder,
Wax said, finally spotting what he thought was her silhouette, crouched at the back of the dusty chamber beside a rack of shovels.
Perhaps I serve harmony, but I do so because I wish it.
Ah, she whispered. Do you know, Wax, how long he cultivated you? How long he teased you, led you by the nose? How he sent you to be hardened by the roughs, so we could draw you back in once you had aged properly, like leather being cured.
Wax raised Vindication, but the side of the building burst outward, showering pieces of wood across the lawn. Wax tried to draw a bead on her, but didn't fire, and Bleeder ducked out. He had to be very careful with this shot. Renette had sent but one bullet, and only it would matter in this fight. Bleeder fled into the night and launched into the air. The breaking wall had been an indication, but this was confirmation. Her metal mind, drained of the speed she'd stored up, was now useless. She'd left it on the ground beside the governor's bones and had become a coin shot instead. Wax followed, pushing on the same nails, sending himself into the sky. He could see why she'd chosen to become a coin shot. Steel pushing lent great maneuverability and speed, and logically gave her the best chance of escaping. There was a problem with that, of course. Steel was his domain. The pile of bones on the floor of the little shack proved that at least one person was having a worse night than Wayne was. He nudged the pile with his toe, then grimaced at his wounded leg. Rusting inconvenient, that was. He had to grab the wall for support. He looked toward Maracy.
"I can't decide," he said, "if the governor already being dead means we did a really terrible job or a really good one."
"How," Maracy replied, kneeling beside the corpse, "could you see this as anything other than terrible?"
"Well, see, we weren't the ones what was in charge of keeping him alive when he died," Wayne shrugged. "Guess any time I find a corpse and it ain't my fault they're dead, I feel a little relieved."
Milan strolled into the cottage, still wearing the body of the guardswoman, though she had moved back to speaking with her own voice now.
"It's getting rough out there. We'll want to get back into the mansion soon."
Maracy continued to kneel by the bones, which were lit by Wayne's lantern. His wrists still chafed from his confinement, and his legs smarted something fierce. Rusting Chandra. She'd known just how to take him out. A quick burst of speed, tie his legs together, gag him, steal his metal mines. Even though it didn't matter none how quickly he could heal if he was tied up. Of course, she should have checked his hands for gum as she towed him into the room.
"The governor is dead," Maracy whispered.
"Yeah," Wayne said. "Having your skeleton removed tends to do that to a guy."
"What does it mean?"
Maracy said, looking out the side of the shack in the direction they'd seen Wax escape.
"Well, it means he won't be making it to his tap dancing lessons this—"
"Wayne."
"Yeah?"
"Shut it."
"Yes, ma'am."
Maracy closed her eyes, and Wayne leaned back against the wall, looking out at that crowd. Angry, waiting for the governor to give them his speech. The speech that was supposed to stop all this.
"Bleeder was planning to outrage them," Milan said. "I heard some of his speech. Maybe we can make them disperse?"
"No," Maracy said, standing. "We can do better than that."
She turned to Milan, then nudged the governor's skull with her foot.
"How long will it take you to imitate him?"
"I didn't digest his corpse. And don't wince like that. It's not my fault you people happen to be edible. If it helps, you taste terrible, even if you're properly aged. Anyway, it will be tough. Tensoon's pretty good at recreating a face from a skull, but I'm way less practiced."
Wayne didn't say anything. He could shut it. Damn right he could shut it when he needed to, even if there was jokes that practically begged to be said.
"You have us to help you get it right," Maracy said to Milan. "Plus it will be dark. You won't need to fool Innate's mother, just a crowd of angry citizens, most of whom haven't seen him up close."
Milan folded her arms, inspecting the remains.
"Fine. If you think you can come up with something for me to say that will placate that crowd, I'll do it."
Wayne stood still, jaw clenched.
"No jokes about, well, the obvious things.
Besides, he'd just learned something far worse. Something that was no cause for laughter." Maracy looked at him, then frowned.
"Wayne, what's wrong?"
He sat down, shaking his head.
"Wayne?"
Maracy said, rising, sounding genuinely concerned.
"I didn't mean to snap at you, it's just that—"
"I don't mind what you said," Wayne said.
"Then what?"
"Well," he said, looking at Milan, "I'd just always assumed, you know, that humans tasted wonderful."
Nope, Milan said.
You really wounded my self-esteem, Wayne said. Maybe I'm different. Want to gnaw on my arm a bit? It'll grow right back. At least once we find out what that monster did with my metal mines.
Miracy sighed loudly.
Milan, work on those bones. I need to rewrite your speech.
24. Bleeder had obviously practiced with steel. She knew how to push on passing latches or lampposts to adjust her course. She knew how to drop low before shoving on a parked motor car to give herself lateral speed, rather than just pushing herself higher. She was capable. Wax was more than capable. He followed as a shadow, never more than a half leap behind her. He sensed an increasingly frantic quality to her motions, flared steel trying to push herself out of his reach. He led her at first, trying to run her out of steel. They bounced through the city, two currents in the mists, leaping over roadways clogged with angry rioters, past middle-class neighborhoods full of closed shutters and extinguished lights, over the grounds of the rich, whose security forces stood tensely by gates waiting for this hellish night to end. Wax confirmed to himself as they flew that Bleeder had not been the marksman. She'd worn one of his masks earlier, and seemed to be doing so again from the quick glance he got as she passed a burning building in the night. But she did so to consternate and confuse him. Marks had sought the insides of rooms as he ran, trying to set up an ambush. She kept to the open spaces, as if frightened of the indoors. No running toward skyscrapers, no seeking the cramped confines of the slums. Instead, she headed directly east from the governor's mansion, toward the freedom of the outer city. There wouldn't be nearly so much metal out there, making it difficult for her to flee, but also removing some of his advantage. He couldn't let that happen. As they chased past a late train, Wax redoubled his efforts. He anticipated her turn as she cut away from the train toward an industrial quarter, and he cut sideways, earning a few seconds. As she leaped over a squat burning building, passing protesters who threw rocks at her from below, Wax skimmed between it and the building beside it, coming around the other side in a precise turn. He passed through boiling smoke and emerged, gun out, as she came down from a more graceful arc. That earned a curse from her as she saw him. She flung herself down a street, using each passing light as another source to push off, increasing her speed. It was done with deftness, but Wax had an advantage. He decreased his weight, filling his metal mind. As always, though the change was sometimes subtle, this increased his velocity. If he decreased his weight while in motion, he got a little burst of speed. He didn't know why. In a chase such as this, shoving off each light that passed, little advantages like that added up. Each cut corner, each careful judge of an arc, each use of the speed boost in flight after landing for a moment, sent him closer to her, to the point that as they neared the edge of the city, she glanced backward and found him about to grab her heels. She cried out, a feminine exclamation of surprise. She shoved herself to the side, passing out over the river, and managed to land on the roadway portion of the East Bridge, holding on to one of the support wires. Wax landed gracefully before her, gun out.
You can't run from me, Bleeder. Let me remove your spike and take you prisoner. Perhaps the others can find a way someday to heal your madness.
And become a slave again,
she whispered behind the red and white mask.
Would you clasp the manacles willingly on your own hands?
If I had done the horrible things that you have, then yes, I would demand to be taken in.
And what of the god you serve? When will Harmony accept his punishments? The people he lets die, the people he makes die.
Wax raised his gun, but Bleeder launched herself upward. Wax trailed her with his weapon, but she bounced back and forth between massive bridge support beams, and he did not fire. Instead, he lifted himself with a push, soaring up, coat flapping, until he reached the top of one of the bridge's suspension towers. Bleeder waited here, atop the pinnacle, dressed in her red shirt and trousers, a loose cape blowing around her. Wax landed and leveled the gun. Bleeder dropped the mask. She wore Lessie's face. Maracy didn't tell the other constables, even Aradel, the truth about Innate. What would she have said? Sorry, but the man we've been protecting was actually the killer? Oh, and the city has been run by an insane Chandra for who knows how long? She'd make a report soon, once she knew how to explain it. But for now, she didn't have time. She needed to save the city. She still felt a stab of guilt as she stood near the flimsy stage at the front of the steps, where she watched Captain Arad